This is the EWN Radio Network.
Hello and welcome to Idea Success with Sylvia, the place you need to be for the next hour for information and inspiration to turn your dreams into dollars, your concepts into cash, and your ideas into income and impact.
And good day, everybody. You know, if you want to get your ideas or you want to help others get theirs into action, then you're in the right place for the next 60 minutes. And if you need to get out of your head and get things done, then stay tuned for the next hour. Hi, I'm Sylvia Henderson, the maven of implementation, and I'm honored that you've chosen to spend your most valuable resource in your life, your time, with me today. This show is about ideas, getting, clarifying, implementing, and supporting ideas. I interview people who've put ideas into action, realized their dreams, achieved their goals, and followed through with their intentions to bring you best practices that you can use right away to actively create your own success. And I interview experts in a wide range of fields who are resources for you to call on to make an income and an impact with your ideas. And the latter is who I have today, an expert who can help you get your business ideas into action in a certain way. And my guest is Laurette Farris. Laurette, welcome to Idea Success with Sylvia.
Thank you, Sylvia. I am very excited to be with you for the next 60 minutes.
All right. And let me read off the title and the description of the program in case people are listening to the recording and are not looking at the computer. So the name of the program today, or the title I gave it anyway, is Fund Your Business Idea, Raising Capital in the New Capital Market. And the description is Laurette Farris works with entrepreneurs to raise capital in the new capital market, which is her tagline. So when you need to raise capital to fund a business idea, you need to know what Laurette will reveal in our interview. So join us for a fundastic conversation. So my words, although you can use them if you want. So just to start off with the way I started off with all my guests, since this is about ideas, kind of give listeners kind of your bio. How did you get to making this your business and doing what you do today?
Well, it's an interesting ride, I will tell you, because I am a former investment banker, and I came out of that market running an investment banking firm well over 15 years ago. But as the what's called the Jobs Act, which is a security and new legislation, came about that provided the opportunity for businesses to raise capital directly for themselves, I felt it was just a perfect place for me to come in to assist, because it's all about security regulations. And while they can use those rules and regulations to raise capital themselves without the assistance of an investment banking firm, understanding those rules and regulations was a whole nother story. So iBoss came about to be that support mechanism for companies that want to do it themselves.
And you have an extensive investment or financial services background, so I just wanted you to tell listeners a little bit about, you know, kind of, so what qualifies you to do this? Talk about this.
Sure. So you know, and thank you for asking me that, because a lot of times when I say investment banking, because I come from that world, I think that everyone knows what I'm talking about. But what investment bankers are, and a lot of times you'll also hear the term broker-dealers, those are the companies that employ the brokers that you hear about often, that when a company wants to raise capital, they'll generally go to these firms, and the firms take over. So doing IPOs or initial public offerings and private placements and secondary offerings, those are all terms that you're used to hearing on Wall Street or of Wall Street. Well, these are the mechanisms that I'm used to doing as president and CEO of two investment banking firms. I was very much entrenched in that whole process. And so I spent quite a bit of time actually as the director of compliance. But I also became president and CEO. So understanding what happens in a trading desk. So when you think about McDonald's buying and selling stock from McDonald's, that's what happens over a trading desk. Or operations, which then handles when a customer is paying for their trade or selling their securities, operations handles that. And again, compliance. Compliance is the law in a broker-dealer. So all of those areas, either I've worked in them directly and or I manage them. So coming from Wall Street, understanding those various mechanisms, that's what I cut my teeth on in the financial services industry. And again, what I love about what's happening in this, what I call the new capital markets, is the fact that those same vehicles are there and they're designed to size them where they can be utilized for much smaller companies than most people think about when they think about that area. So that is my background. I started in financial services by doing insurance, so I did mainly disability insurance for small business owners, and I moved into doing business brokerage, which was helping sort of your Main Street businesses buy and sell. I then moved into doing some mergers and acquisitions. So all of the pieces that are necessary to understand when you're trying to work in the financial services is what I did, and that's why today I call myself a business strategist, because the information I'm able to impart really covers a lot of different areas to help someone focus on what's right for them and not a cookie cutter kind of process.
Okay.
I know that's a lot of work.
No, that's what I wanted you to explain, because I think as listeners hear financial information, and I've interviewed a couple of other kinds of financial folks in past programs, you know, what would be going through my head right off the bat is, so, you know, who is she, or in other cases he, but who is she to that's imparting this kind of information that I should listen to seriously? We hear a lot of, I think we're exposed to, especially in personal development and professional development world, I won't mention names, but we're exposed to people with big, well-known international names who, you know, write books with financial advice of many different kinds. And we go, ooh, he or she wrote that book. That means they must know what they're talking about. And not necessarily so. You know, so I want to make sure people honor your expertise by knowing sort of your background.
No, I appreciate that. And actually, to that point, I'm doing it in reverse. I'm out here doing what I do, and now I'm actually starting to write a book.
All right. We're going to talk about that in a little bit. I want listeners to know, I have two kinds of listeners. One is the individual that's either sitting at her, for the most part, by nature of the channel that this is on, but an individual who's sitting at her desk and working for somebody, and she's thinking, oh, man. Or she's at home as a stay-at-home mom thinking, oh, I want to start a business with this idea. Now, that's one kind of and I have no clue as to how to get money other than my savings and to ask, you know, some friends and family for money. I have no clue how to finance my business idea. So that's one kind of a listener. The other kind of listener I have, and we're going to address that person, the other kind of listener I have is has an established business. And maybe bringing in, I don't know, up to $1 million, maybe more than $1 million a year in revenue. But they have a new idea for a product or service that they want to add, or they see their business about to grow and they need to add resources and people and infrastructure, and they're looking for financing that way. But banks are looking at them saying, no, you haven't proven yourself yet or whatever. So that's the other kind of listener that we're going to address. So those two types of listeners, we're going to take kind of two paths that probably will lead back to one.
Okay.
So which one of those two is the easiest one to address first?
The difficult question to say easy. If I might start from the standpoint, and then we can break them up. If I might start with something that most people really don't like to hear, but whether they're type A or type B, they got to do a business plan. You know, and everyone hears about business plan, and you don't know how many times I see the roll of the eye when I say you need a business plan. But anyone who's looking to do something, and especially if the something that they're looking to do is to get other people's money, whether it's an investor or whether it's a bank, they have to provide them with evidence, documentation that explaining what they're trying to do, how they're trying to do it, and how it's going to benefit the person that they're trying to get that money from. So either side of the fence, business plan, it begins with, and so if from that point you want to jump into the person who is considering doing something, or the stay-at-home mom that's trying to figure it out, that might be a good place for us to begin.
Okay, and when you're talking business plan, you're right. My natural inclination is to roll my eyes and say, oh my gosh, shoot me first. Do you mean, or will you address this as we're talking, do you mean a complex, you know, 30-page binder business plan in all situations, or can there just be kind of a, here's my concept, and here's where I think I'm going to be, you know, how I think I'm going to be making money in other, in, mm-hmm. are both mm-hmm. of those?
Yeah. So yeah, So a business plan, what I would like for people to sort of take away from this is the thought that this business plan is that cold, sterile, you know, hard to put together document that they just have to do versus, and I love what it is that you do, Sylvia, when you say just pulling it out of your head. What a business plan is, it is just the information that's in your head put together in a concise enough fashion that whoever it is you're trying to speak to can understand what it is that you're telling them. Because when you want to stand and express verbally to someone what it is that you want to do, they hear what they want to hear. And what they want to hear may not necessarily be what you're trying to do or say. So other than having a roadmap, and a lot of times that's how people really need to look at a business plan, is it's a roadmap. Being able to show someone that roadmap helps them to really internalize what it is that you're saying to them. That's on the one side. On the other side, putting together that roadmap makes a difference for you. Most of us have these visions in our heads, but think about almost anything that you then sat down and you started putting pen to paper, you know how much what you thought starts changing the because the mere fact that you're putting pen to paper, you're now starting to really detail what's going on. And what you visioned in your mind didn't have the levels of detail that are necessary, and that's what helps you to either believe you're building on the right stuff and you keep going, or you start seeing some holes in it and you start having to do a couple of other things. So whether I use the term business plan, whether I use the term executive summary, which is a smaller version of the business plan, at the end of the day, you have to put pen to paper to put together a precise enough writing that whoever you're trying to speak to, and especially if you're trying to get money from them, they can understand what you're doing and saying. And you used the term a minute ago, friends and family. A lot of people don't realize how important that writing could be even when they're reaching out to friends and family. If you had to put pen to paper going after an investor or to walk into the bank, what would make you think that your friends or family don't deserve the same information so that they can believe they're making a better decision? And a lot of times, if that's done, more people would probably find that they would get more friends or family interested than those that don't. So, yeah, a business plan isn't talking about the document. It's talking about your plan. What is your plan? You say you want $100. Well, what do you want it for? You need to be able to detail that.
Ooh, I like that. And I haven't heard that before, and I've been around in terms of approaching your friends and family even with that plan. I like that.
Yeah, a lot of people don't think about that, but, you know, money is money is money. My money, just because I'm your cousin, is no different than that accredited investor's money. And if you're going to give that accredited investor respect enough to put it in writing, then do the same thing for me.
Hmm. Okay, well, that's almost the perfect segue to the smaller business individual. I didn't say small business, but I just said the smaller business individual, the one who either doesn't yet have or has just started their own little small business, whether that's a brick and mortar or whether that's what I like mine, a nebulous practice that deals more with information than it does with something solid that I sell. So let's start with that newbie person first.
Okay.
What in the world? Where do they start? You know, do they even come to you? And if so, where do you take them first?
So the short answer is yes. I do have people come to me who know they want to do something, but they don't know what it is. And so I'm going to speak to that as well as those same people who are just thinking it and not looking to reach out to anyone yet. The first thing I always recommend to anyone, and I do myself, if I have a thought about any business or something I think is going to be a moneymaker, I'm going to sit down and do a spreadsheet. Because until I can see that it really can make money, you know, a lot of people come up with and I love what I do because you find so many interesting ideas and thoughts and there's just so much out there. And so the first thing I tell anyone to do is sit down and put together a spreadsheet. Convince yourself that this can really be a profitable endeavor. Unless you're doing a mission-based something that is not for profit, If what you're doing is supposed to be a profitable enterprise, which if we're talking about investors or the bank, that's what it has to be in order to get their money, then show proof to yourself in numbers that it can be profitable. And that's as easy as you sit down and you have column A, these are the three kind of services that I want to do. Column B, what can I charge for them? Column C, how many can I really sell? And we all know, or should know, in going through that process, you are not going to be immediately profitable. That's why you're reaching out for other people's money, because you need some capital to get it going, to sustain it in order to get to the place that it's profitable. But my point is, put some, when I say pen to paper, now it's in a spreadsheet format. Plot it out to get some sense of, can this really be a profitable endeavor? And once you can see your numbers, and this is like an afternoon. This is not a big, long, laborious process. This is in an afternoon, you sit down again and you think about these services or products you're talking about other people buying, how much are they going to buy them for, what is your capacity for how much of them can you sell, and you look at those numbers. If once you do that and you have now internally convinced yourself that this is a profitable endeavor, now you start putting some words to those numbers. And I'll tell you, as far as investors go, most of the time that's what they do. First, they're going to look at your numbers. And once they look at your numbers, they're going to walk backwards to see, now, how are you really going to make those numbers come about? Meaning, what is your marketing focus? And then they're going to go backwards and look at your team. Now, who are the people you are going to involve with you to make that marketing happen, to make those numbers work? And your team does not have to be people you have right now, but it has to be identified. I'm sorry, I'm going way beyond the question right now. But
no,
yes,
it's good.
I get on my steam, and there it goes. But you want to figure out, do you have numbers that can make sense when you're thinking about a profitable enterprise? A lot of time on the words first, I think they're doing themselves a disservice to spend all that time and energy in building the story if they don't have the numbers, because if you don't have the numbers, you are not going to bring a penny in from anyone else.
Now, this is good, because I think that this early person is also tends to be a dreamer and, I've got this passion, or I've got this hobby, or I've got this, I thought of something that will solve a problem that I have, and, I can make this into a business. And, you're talking about start thinking through where the rubber meets the road. The thing that was coming into my head, and I don't want to spend too long, too deep on each aspect, but what came into my head was, but what if I don't know the numbers?
So if you want to start a business, and I'll keep putting it this way, and you want to get other people's money involved, then you have to go find the numbers. And research today is as easy as Missy Google. Okay? You go online and you start searching for other people that might do something similar, other products, other processes. You start looking at what they're charging. You start thinking through, if that's what I'm going to do, what are some costs that's going to come about? Because it's one thing what you charge, it's a whole other thing what it's going to cost you to put that product or service out there versus what you're charging, because it's the net effect that tells you whether you're profitable or not. But the point is, if you don't know your numbers, sit down and talk to Missy Google. Let Missy Google help you understand your numbers.
Great, great. I am going to actually take a quick break, about a minute and a half, 2 minutes. When we come back, we will continue this conversation for what the newbie, I'm calling them, the new business person, needs to consider when they're looking for other people's money.
Okay.
So with that, I'll be back in a moment.
All righty.
This is the EWN Radio Network.
Hi, I'm Sandra Yancey, founder and CEO of eWomen Network. One of my mottos for business owners is, you can't do it alone. Whether you're in the startup stage of your business or you're scaling, you can't grow without relationships to provide support, wisdom, and new customers. eWomen Network is your home to connect with other women entrepreneurs who have been where you are or are experiencing the same challenges. We have chapters across the U.S. and Canada that have monthly events featuring our trademarked process called accelerated networking to ensure you get the contacts, resources, and leads you need to grow your business. And once you become a member, you get many benefits, including 2 one-on-one coaching sessions, unlimited access to our membership database, your own personal profile page, and discounts on products and services with our business partners such as UPS and American Express Open. Join the eWomen Network community and let us help you live your dream. For details, visit eWomenNetwork.com.
How many times have you had an idea, yet you let so many thoughts fill your head that you're stuck in inaction and don't handle any of them? How quickly do you jump from idea to idea without focusing on any one for very long? You've got to change that pattern if you hope to get things done and turn your ideas to reality. Let Sylvia Henderson and the IdeaSuccessNetwork.com give you tools, resources, and strategies that turn your dreams into dollars, your concepts into cash, and your ideas into income. If you want to get profitable and fulfill your purpose by getting your ideas in action, go to IdeaSuccessNetwork.com and enter your name and email address for your Idea Success Note. Sylvia's bi-monthly tips and practices for getting out of your head and into action. You owe it to yourself to do it today, right now, before another idea fills your head to overflowing.
And so I'm back, and I'm Sylvia Henderson, the host of Idea Success with Sylvia, and I'm speaking with, having a conversation with Laurette Farris, and we're talking about how to get other people's money to fund a business idea or a growing business. And we just might have in the background my office assistant, too, if we hear some barking. So, Laurette, we are back, and let's just continue where we dropped off. So, still talking about the newbie. They've done a spreadsheet. They've figured out their numbers to see whether they really will make money. What next?
Okay, so now that you understand your numbers, now you can start putting together your story. And your story needs to cover how are you going to make. Well, let me back up a second. Who are you? What void is it that you're looking to fill? Anytime someone's going into business, they need to ensure that there's a market. And how do you ensure there's a market for the product or service is you have to understand the pain point of whoever this audience is that you're going after. And is the product or service that you're looking to provide, does that satisfy a pain point? Because, you know, again, if there's no market for this product or service, you're not going to be profitable. So who are you? What is the pain point that you're solving with your product or service? How are you going to deliver this product or service to this market that you're going after? What are some of the time frames that are going to be necessary for this to happen? Take a look at the others that are in the market. A lot of times, young newbies like to think they have no competition. They like to say, oh, I'm the only one that, I don't think there's anything new. What you do and how you do it might be different, or you may be putting together a combination of something that doesn't exist. And I guess to a large degree where I will bow to what I just said is, yes, in technology, that may be one clear area that something doesn't already exist, but understanding the market as it relates to technology and things like that still winds up being a part of what you have to take a look at. So now in putting the words the words now have to center around these numbers that you put together, and how is everything else you're doing and you're saying going to transcend into those numbers.
Right.
And I'll tell you, as a former investment banker, when I review business plans, I am one of those that the first place I'm going to go is the numbers. So to give you a little example there of how the people you're reaching out to for their money look at it is, they look at the numbers to get some idea of where you're going. The unfortunate part is so many people want to say that, you know, as a startup, you're bringing in zero revenue today, and you look at the business plan in 12 months, you're going to be $3, $4, $5 million in. So people need to be mindful of realistic numbers. But I would go from looking at what you're telling me your revenue is going to be, and again, I'm now going to go to your marketing, because if your marketing story doesn't match how in the world you're going to make those numbers, then that becomes, in our world, a very unrealistic business plan. And that's immediately going to go to the side. Now, if how you're saying you're going to market to reach your audience, once you have that all together, make sure you also, again, take a look at your competition. Who else is out there? What percentage of the pie do you believe you're going to get? Because nobody's going to have 100% of the pie. One story that I tell clients or anyone I'm speaking to, again, with newbies, they kind of have that thing of, well, I don't want anyone to see my business plan because they're going to steal my idea. Or, you know,
right.
I tell them in a minute, when you want a burger, you go to Burger King and you look down the block and you see McDonald's. And you look across the street and you see Wendy's. No one's going to get 100% of the market. There is plenty of space for each one of us. And, you know, in your religious mind, our Father has for us what is for us. So don't be so concerned about what someone else is doing, but understand what they're doing. Because if you're in the same space, you need to have some of the similar traits of those that are successful.
Oh, I love what you're saying with that, because I hear so many times in my strategy sessions, I don't want to share too much because somebody might steal my idea. So on target.
Yes. Yeah.
Right on target.
Mm-hmm.
So if a listener is, and I want to make sure we say this a couple of times, just even what you've shared so far, if the listener wants to get more information, you've got a lot of resources at your site, video as well as other information. How do they find you?
So my website, www.ibossinc.com, ibossinc.com. I try to provide, I believe in training. I believe I can't have a client if they don't understand the market. And so I do try to provide enough information that people understand. And if they want to then contact me on any page on my website, there is a contact box that will pop up for, you know, scheduling of appointments or sending me a question and things of that nature. So I try to make it as easy as possible for folks to reach me.
Right, because this topic, beyond going to the bank or the credit union to ask for money, you know, is such a mystery and a fear issue for so many people, including me somewhat. So that's, you know, the other reason why I wanted to have the conversation with you.
Yeah, and I think sometimes you hit the nail on the head. It's really, you know, just a misunderstanding. And for me, because the bulk of what we do is assisting companies in raising capital, utilizing mechanisms that they use on Wall Street, people immediately shut down when they hear that because they believe there's so much to it. And where I try to help them understand these mechanisms, it's really just understanding the compliance behind what you can do and what you can't do. Think about, we are in the Washington, D.C. area, so think about how many federal contractors are in this area. Well, to be a federal contractor, you have to understand the FARs. You got to understand the regulations. When you get a government contract, I mean, that contract is like 90 pages long.
Yeah.
It's just understanding compliance. And once you understand the compliance, you're off and running. And again, when people think about Wall Street, they're thinking, oh, you're talking about, you know, $50, $60, $100 million. No. These vehicles are designed so if you want to raise $500,000, if you want to raise $1 million, our sweet spot is a maximum of $5 million. So yes, people are, they, because they don't understand the mechanisms, there is a certain fear factor. And then even when it comes to the bank, the difference is it has been traditional to talk about loans as it relates to what your credit score or even the profitability of your company to understand whether you can get a traditional loan or not. So that's a general understanding. Once you go in and start understanding the other pieces, now all of a sudden the fear factor is lessened because you know what you have to provide. And at the end of the day, to me, that's the answer. Just understand it. And all of a sudden, you can start walking into spaces that you never knew you could walk in before.
Mm. So if the idea of asking for $1 million is too big even for me, what are my alternatives? What if I think I just need $100,000 or $500,000? What vehicles? I would imagine there are different vehicles from the ones for the $1 to $5 million.
Mm-hmm. So there are different vehicles all along the line, and I'm going to pull back and say it starts with what are you really trying to do and how are you trying to do it. So oftentimes, whatever level of capital you're saying you need, you have to think about, how are you going to pay it back? When we talk about loans, you have to make enough money to what they call service the debt. So with what you're doing, are you going to make enough money to service the debt? But keep in mind, when you're talking about a loan, servicing the debt doesn't mean, you know, 12 months later, how are you going to pay it back? You have to have enough current revenue to service that debt. When you're talking about investments, when whatever the amount of money is you're trying to raise, you have to think about how long is it going to take you to generate enough revenue to, number one, pay back the investor. So get the investor back the money that they put in, plus percentage that they're looking for as a return. And now the difference in an investment versus a loan is, I like to think of investments, at least at that level, as patient capital. So you want to find those places that someone understands what you're trying to do and will be patient enough to wait until the plan that you told them. You know, if you loan me $100,000, I will make enough revenue to get you that $100,000 back in 12 months plus the 20% return on top of it you're looking for. And there's different ways of doing it. I'm just giving that example. But those are your mechanisms. And so when we're talking smaller dollars, again, if you the criteria for traditional loans are very difficult for a new, young startup unless you're coming in with the kind of collateral. Let me fix how I'm about to say this. Unless you can show the bank that you don't need their money, it's going to be very difficult for you to get their money when you're young and small. Okay. And the flip side is, again, regardless of the dollar amount, if you want to reach out to an investor, you have to be able to show them how you will be able to generate the money that they're looking for. Now, the way that things are today, you have this huge area called crowdfunding. And so that is a mechanism for those smaller dollars for people to consider bringing money in. You know, there's a lot of pieces at play. The short part of that response I say to you is crowdfunding in general is still either donation or reward based. So people are donating to a cause because equity-based crowdfunding, meaning for them to invest in you and have some portion of equity, that is still not approved by the Security and Exchange Commission yet, though there are about 13 states that have created their own crowdfunding regulations. So not to pull this conversation too far into that, crowdfunding is an option you can look at. But there's another big area that is significant these days, and that's called peer-to-peer lending. And so peer-to-peer lending is a mechanism that, unlike your traditional banks, it is investors are pooling their money into companies that you as an individual can apply for some of that money, and if you're approved, it's a much quicker turnaround to actually receive that capital, and it's less expensive because all of the pieces that go into a bank is no longer a part of it, like a lot of those middle people are removed. So peer-to-peer lending, crowdfunding are two significant areas, I tell you, for smaller dollars and younger companies they might want to consider.
Okay. And I know there's a whole world of understanding how that works, and we don't have time to go into depth with that, and we may not want to anyway because, you know, you are creating resources for teaching people and writing a book and all of that good stuff. So I don't know if you're going to cover that there or not, but I would encourage anybody listening who wants to investigate crowdfunding and peer-to-peer financing to, you know, dig into that deeper than this program is going to dig into it.
Yeah, program 60 minutes is like not even the tenth of the time it would take.
Yeah. And so your sweet spot, you already said, was the $1 to $5 million, you know, looking for that kind of funding. So that's obviously got to be somebody pretty much experienced in their with a going concern, a going business. What do you want to talk about to that kind of a person?
Okay, so the sweet spot, yes, is sort of that maximum of $5 million. And I say sort of because I do have other resources to come to bear for bigger than that. But it's not one to five. It's from zero. It's really startup. It's newbie to $5 million. And so why do I say it that way? I work with a lot of startups. So what I actually do is iBoss helps companies to walk through the process from beginning to end. We bring various resources to bear, from working with them to get their investor-grade business plan put together, helping them understand the language, what to do, how to do, helping them to initially raise seed capital. And seed capital can be anywhere upwards to $250,000. Because of what it costs to raise that $1 to $5 million, again, iBoss helps them to get that footing that they're going to need by getting some seed capital in there first, and that helps them to also finance doing the rest of the raise. So startups are you know, clearly one of our markets. They don't have to already be in business and moving. But what I would say to you is whether they're a startup or whether they're an existing seasoned business, again, where we jump in is getting that investor-grade business plan ready, helping them to get their executive summary done. But one of the big things that we're doing is also walking them through how to develop their quality pitch. Because now as they start talking to investors, understanding what to say, how to say, what the investors are looking for, things of that nature, that's what we do. And if I can give us a quick plug, we are in the throes of a collaboration with Microsoft to put together a show called Pitch Perfect, where we will, that will culminate in helping to train our clients to, again, pitch to investors, but it will be broadcast live stream. And we should be working with somewhere between 15 and 20 Microsoft stores here on the East Coast. So companies can go into a Microsoft store and participate in these pitch events where people are standing there and you know, really practicing their skill of pitching for investors.
So, okay, you know, people who show up on Shark Tank, clearly some of them, the TV show, clearly some of them need to have practiced ahead of time.
Oh, absolutely. The funny thing I laugh about with that is I'm sure they have. I'm sure they didn't reach the place of even qualifying to be on there. But I love the fact that they are there and you get to see where some holes are. And that's exactly what we're doing, helping companies to get better and better at pitching and doing it in front of an audience. Because for iBoss, and again, in looking at the new capital markets, so much money is raised online these days. So many investors aren't doing the face-to-face meetings. So many investors, when you look at their business cards, they have a Skype address. And so getting people comfortable with delivering their pitches using new technology is significant for these new young companies getting those introductions and being able to raise capital. So participating with Microsoft to do these pitch events is just significant. And Microsoft is just throwing various things into the pot to help that, including, you know, again, businesses being able to go to their store and deliver the pitch via Skype and this live stream.
I know, right? Yeah, really. And who? So that makes it even more reachable. Who are these people? Who's at the other end of the live stream? Who is making that evaluation, the assessment?
So we wanted to do it where it was fun also. So actual business owners are being invited to come into the Microsoft store. They are being outfitted with, like, Surface Pros, and they do one level of scoring for those businesses that are doing their pitches. But back in the studio, there are also professionals that are watching. They are doing their scoring, and additionally, there is a level of investors that are listening. Now, these investors for this particular event, there's a lot of regulation behind it that, again, we don't have the time to go into right now. So these investors are not there to directly invest. They are there to critique what they're hearing, and these are all designed to help that company be better to do an actual pitch, because these are pitch practices.
Wow. Great. Great.
Yeah, but that exposure that they're getting is significant, and they're hearing from different levels. So they're hearing from their peers, i.e. the businesses that are in attendance to do scoring. They're hearing from various advisors to businesses, and they're getting scores, and then they're hearing from actual investors who are scoring them. So by the time they're done in the IVOR system, they are very well on their way to being able to stand in front of an individual investor or a group of investors and know what they're doing and how they're doing, and they have the confidence in doing what they have to do.
Mm. So talk a little bit, brag a little bit on your book.
Okay, so the first bragging is it's work. But the second is, just as we're doing with this show, I like being able to show a real track that individuals can take as they're walking in this space of developing a business, growing a business, reaching out for appropriate resources. And when I say resources, because a lot of times people just think about capital. Well, and again, with my being, IVOS is mainly in the equity investment space as opposed to traditional loans. But one of the things I will tell clients all the time is, one of the reasons you want to raise capital isn't just for the capital. Somebody puts money in you, they are going to be more apt to open their database for other resources that you need. So the capital just brings with it some significant other resources. And so being able to set steps and help people to understand sometimes even how to think about these spaces is what I'm enjoying doing and putting together the information for the book. So the book should be ready. If I do, as my publicist is looking for, it should be launched by March. And so walking again through the spaces and helping, I'm doing a lot in the minority and woman-owned business space. When you read most of the reports, even when they're talking about how much capital is now being raised, those are areas that are still so much further behind their counterparts. And what I enjoy is being able to bring this information to those companies and helping them to understand that that pie is not as big as you know, it may be perceived. And once you start breaking it down into bite-sized pieces where folks can understand it, all of a sudden they're able to engage in those spaces. And so that's the track that this first book will be on, in making this kind of information bite-sized to help folks understand how to engage in the process. So, yeah, I'm looking forward to getting that piece done.
And how are people going to be able to get that book?
Oh, gosh, girl, it'll be all over the place, on the website, you know. We will, you know, do our marketing via, you know, your email marketing. But, of course, there'll be a press release party going on. But the easiest thing for any of your audience, again, would be to go to the website, ibossinc.com, which is our central spot. I also would mention that there is a blog that we do. We haven't updated it because none of the regulations have changed recently, but wallstreettomainstreet.net. That's wallstreetst-mainstreet, which is st.net. So that is our blog that also gives a lot of this information. And we have a membership site called Through the Lens of Small Business. It's a long name, but I think it's catchy. Through the Lens of Small Business.com is a membership site that we are also delivering educational platforms and membership services in this same space.
Wow.
A
lot of resources. If there were a final, most important message you listeners to have to leave this program with, what's that message?
that message would be, if you believe you have an idea, don't let anyone else shake your confidence in being able to take that idea through its fruition. Because until you start working through the process, you don't know what kind of diamond in the rough you may have. And please, because this is the biggest issue folks have, they let finances make the decision whether they move forward or not. I would say because there are so many mechanisms to get to financing, let the idea be the driver. Do not let the finances be the driver. Find what you need for the type of capital you need, because there's so much out here. But let your thoughts and ideas be the driver. Build on those ideas. Be realistic. And there's just so much that could happen if you just follow your dream. Do not let finances be the answer to your dream. That's what I would want to leave your audience with.
Woohoo! And considering I'm all about idea success, and this wasn't even planned to say that, I'm loving that message.
I'm throwing it back at you, Sylvia.
And so, as usual, the time goes way, way, way too fast. I hope that you were able to cover, you know, the key points or as much as you feel you needed to cover in the hour. And I just want to make sure listeners know to be able to get more information and to be able to reach you at your website. You'll get all the other info from there. And it is I, which is just the letter I, B like in Baker, OSS, iBossInc.com. I should have asked you, where in the world did that name come from?
Well, that stands for the Internet Back Office Systems and Services.
Whoa! Not what I was expecting you to say. Okay.
Yes. We deliver everything we do virtually.
Okay, cool. Well, thank you, Lorette, and I wish you a great day.
Thank you, Sylvia. It was wonderful spending time with you.
Yep. All right.
That wraps up another hour of Ideas Success with Sylvia, with information and inspiration to turn your dreams into dollars, your concepts into cash, and your ideas into income and impact. Join me next week, same dot time, same dot channel, same dot number, for another episode of Ideas Success with Sylvia.